It's Light the Tower, your daily look around the world of sports with Hall of Fame broadcaster and voice of the Texas Longhorns, Craig Way.
Say goodnight to this one!
And Horns 24/7 insider, Jeff Howe. On your live, local, and independent home for sports talk in Austin, The Horn.
Tuesday morning to you, and certainly hope it's good not only morning, but that it'll be good throughout the course of the day. Wherever you may be, under whatever type of atmospheric and meteorological conditions happen to be thrown in your direction, which at the moment is kind of gray and murky and cloudy around here, I don't mind that. If we get a little rain, just get it out of the area by first pitch tonight. There is a ball game in town. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Light the Tower here on the Horn, 1049, 1019, AM 1260. Streaming on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. A welcome to those of you viewing us on Twitch as well. My name is Craig Way. Glad to have you with us. My co-host alongside the pride of Northwest Williamson County, a proud graduate of Florence High School and a former All-District offensive lineman of the Florence Buffaloes. You know him best for his outstanding work at Horns 24/7, which is about to take him away from us for a few minutes. Jeff Howe is standing by, awaiting the media Zoom briefing from Texas Longhorns head football coach Steve Sarkisian following a morning practice.
Right? I might need to see the ARN training staff before I get there, Craig. I just banged the hell out of my knee against this table and felt something pop, so that's not never good.
Now, if it's a training team, you may be waiting on that a while.
True. What is that like? Just Bucky coming by and giving you the old once over?
That or them just sending you downstairs to those people down there, the doctors down there, whatever, down on the ground floor here. We're on the fourth floor here in the ARN compound, overlooking the beautiful city of Austin, Texas. So Coach Sark has got a news conference, a media briefing getting ready to start in a few minutes, and you'll be...
We're on standby.
Okay, you'll be dispatched to that. Always on standby. Sometimes even when we want him in active duty, but on standby. No, I'm just kidding. He's our producer, our man, a man of many buttons and talents and skills, Jonathan John Donaldson, J. Donaldson. We know him as Snoop Daniel. Good morning to you, Snooper.
Good morning. They don't take our insurance downstairs, so.
Good to know. Thank you,
duly noted.
I'm very sad about that.
You tried that?
Yes. And they're like,
What was the health condition that prompted you to ask them?
It was actually just a regular physical. I was just going to get.
And they don't accept Blue Cross, Blue Shield?
That's what they said.
How un-American, you know?
But that is unfortunate.
Hey, my friend, men's primary care, okay?
All right.
They'll have you. They'll have you taken care of.
Men.
Yeah, Total Men's will take care of you.
Those of you watching on Twitch can see Snoop's hoodie that he's got on today, the Flex ATX hoodie.
Flex ATX hoodie and a custom athletic apparel cap to go alongside.
I'm a company man.
Hey, is it compulsory to have the sticker on the bill of the hat?
Yes.
Stay there?
I've done that since Jeff might be familiar with this culture thing where you leave the sticker on the hat.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even really know why, but you aren't supposed to take it off.
When did that start, Snoop?
In the 90s.
Yeah.
Was it really that far back?
Yes.
I remember it being a thing.
Well, they used to keep, Craig, it used to be so egregious, they would keep the hanging tag on it.
Hold on, that's ridiculous.
That's the first time I remember seeing it. And the first time, honestly, I remember seeing it was Super Bowl 30, the post-game celebration, interviews and everything. Michael Irvin was the one I remember. Michael Irvin had the tags hanging off his hat. The whole never took them off.
Maybe he started the fashion trend, and it just so is that Michael forgot to remove the tag.
It could be.
It began a fashion trend. I don't know. But I mean,
that's the first time I remember seeing
it. Okay, let me put a simple question to you. If you go to a department store and you buy something off the rack, as many of us do, right? Now, of course, you know, the fiance, she orders everything. I mean, she is the Amazon queen. So if if you get something, do you wear it around with the tags on? Of course not.
No.
Right? So why would you do it with a hat?
It's, I don't know, man. The culture told me to do it. I don't even know why. I don't. All my hats.
My wife is a school administrator, and she sees how all the kids are wearing right. their hats. So my daughter gets her, her full league baseball hat. It's an Oakland A's hat, and my wife kept the sticker on
That's
there.
Good for
it's
her.
It's a flat bill hat, and it's still got the sticker on there.
All on the bill?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I did that with a couple of things like after Texas won the back-to-back Big 12 Conference baseball tournaments, I think mm-hmm. in 08 and 09, they were nice enough to give, Keith was down on the field doing the interviews, and then Vinny Alcazar gave him a couple of hats here for you and Craig, you're part
That's
of us.
Awesome.
And it took it up there to us, and they had the stickers. I think I left the stickers on that.
Beats what I saw after the Sugar Bowl when there were student media down there claiming hats on the field at the Superdome.
Really?
So I was like, you guys know we're not really supposed to do that in our line of work, but you can teach their own, I guess.
Didn't stop you from grabbing yours, right? No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Look, I'm not above, free gear, but
But not in that environment.
No, Craig, that's against what is that? Just an ethical violation, procedural violation.
Roger Wallace,
how you would classify that?
Yeah, Roger Wallace told me a great story the other night. We were he and his outstanding wife Tammy and Lynn and I were having dinner. We were over at Matt's El Rancho, and we were having dinner, and they were talking about the story. When Roger,
you went there Saturday night, right?
Yeah,
I had wife and I and my daughter had lunch there Sunday morning before I went over to the dish.
Nice. Did you go with a Bob? Did you have a Bob Armstrong?
No, it wasn't a Bob kind of day.
Yeah, because it's earlier in the day. Maybe
we got there right when they opened, so I was like, and I got to be in the baseball press box, and the bathroom's right next to Craig's broadcast booth.
Very good point. And I usually leave the door open to the booth there, so yeah, I'm grateful to you for that.
Just the old, the old standard,
grateful
what is it,
to you
the number one? Just
yes, you can't go wrong with that. So we're having dinner, and they get to tell them this story about. It was in the days when it was kind of not only allowed, but kind of fashionable almost for some media to take their spouses with them in covering games.
Yeah.
I saw it a lot mm-hmm. during the days, a lot. And they were covering, I'm trying to remember what it was. Was it a Super Bowl? It was Super Bowl. I believe it was a Super Bowl. And they were covering a Super Bowl. And no, I know what it was. It was a Cowboys home game, and it was the strike year, 87, I think it was.
Oh, jeez.
And Tammy's with Roger, and they go down afterwards, and she's got the credential. She'd helped him carry tripod, helped him carry gear. Mm. But they get to the interview room, and he's like, just stay over here in the corner. I'm going to go and get some quick thing, on the shoulder with the camera. Just stand over there with the tripod. I'll be back in a minute. He comes back, and it was absolute horror. He sees Tom Landry signing her credential.
Wow.
He's like, no! It's just like, well, he was just standing right there, and I thought, I'm just going to ask, or I'll always regret. And he did. And he's like, I'll be glad to do that in there. And signed the credential, and that was that. And nobody was the wiser, and they went on, and they said they still have that signed credential to this day.
My brother did that one time when I was working at the local Florence paper. Somehow I got credentialed for Cowboys training camp when it was in San Antonio.
Yeah.
And it was the weekend the Texans were – there was like a joint practice, and they were going to do a scrimmage. So
yeah.
Spent a couple days down in San Antonio. And I'm trying to get – because I'm going to do a big football preview because I'm running a paper in Florence and I can pretty much do whatever I want. So I'm trying to get, different player audios and whatnot. And I'm looking around at my brother. I'm like, I don't know.
He's supposed to be
my cameraman. I have no idea where he is. I look over right around the 50-yard line. He's getting David Carr's autograph. I'm like, what are you doing? What are you doing?
Because relatives, they don't know any better
that. Here's the thing, Craig. He knew better. I think he just, A, really wanted David Carr's autograph, and B, wanted to see what my reaction would be.
Yeah. Okay.
Different deal. Like, Roger's situation, that's just, you don't know any better. This was a deal where I think it was just a giant rib on me, I think is what the deal was.
There you go. Already some folks weighing in on the Specs text line at 337-3776. I like this. Our man Jimmy says, when they do that with the tag, they're just barring the item. They intend to return it. They're going to return it.
Oh, no.
How can you return a hat, though? That's disgusting.
Somebody said, I leave the tag on the bill if it's underneath, the sticker underneath.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've done that before, too. And then somebody said, here, yeah, ooh, maybe this is a good rule of thumb. No hat stickers if you're 21 or over.
Man, there are some hats over the years that I wish I had saved and not let anything happen to. Like, I had a really nice hat. The year Texas went to the Final Four.
Oh, three.
Somebody bought me, like, the official, like, Final Four hat. It was, like, I think it was a Flex Fit. It was a really nice hat. And, of course, it's one of those that, you know, you go cut the grass and you wear a hat or
sure.
whatever. And this,
yeah, I think I did the same
I'm
thing.
I'm pretty sure that hat's in a landfill somewhere now.
Yeah, I probably lost in mine as well. Okay, so it brings up the Specs text line question for the day. Best, now, okay, let me tell you what it is, and then I'll tell you kind of what we get, but maybe you'd steer away from. I'm really appealing to the rank and file here, not the real sports collector like these two guys. You know, best piece of sports memorabilia you own.
Speaking of sports collectibles, I'm obsessing over a card right now.
Are you really?
Yeah, I'm on an auction site trying to win one. It's the I've talked about this card before, Snoop. You know this card. It's the Emmitt Smith rookie card, the 1990 score supplemental rookie card. Yeah, trying to get that card.
Where's the bidding at?
I'm right now. I'm on Pristine Auction, and I'm watching like three different copies of it. I think one's a Beckett graded 10, which if you're into card grading, Beckett doesn't give out 10s very easy. There's one that's just an autograph graded card, and one I forgot what the other one is that I'm watching. But I'm obsessing over that card now. It's weird, Craig, when you get older and you have money and the things you wanted as a kid, now you're able to go get them. And it's like I'm 10 years old all over again, obsessing over
gimme,
this card.
Gimme. Yeah. My good friend Fred Trudeau at Leaf Johnson Ford is a big card collector, and he's been trying to locate for me. It doesn't have to be in mint condition because I don't know I want to spend that much money, but I'd like to have a set of baseball cards, Topps 1970, because that was the first year I collected them. And they're really, really good cards.
Just a Topps 1970 top set.
Yeah, and he's trying to find a good deal, you know, that sort of thing. Yeah. So what you just heard Jeff talking about, that's not what I'm looking for on this deal. I want to know something that's close to your heart, not something of collectible return value, not something you're looking at as a marketable commodity, not something that you would turn around and sell if the price is right, something that means something special to you as a sports collectible. You know, and I wish I had it today. I had a little, they had in that 1970 set of Topps baseball cards, they had these little posters of the players. And my first favorite baseball player was Dodger center fielder Willie Davis. And I had one of him. I wish I had that to this day. It might not be worth much of anything, but I wish I had it for me. So, you know, if you had something specific that's not necessarily a marketable commodity, and maybe it is, but you don't really want to part with it, that's what I'm looking for. On the Specs text line. Is there something like that for you, Snoop, that comes to mind, something that you really would not want to part with, that you really like, that is a sports collectible, a card, a shirt, a hat, autograph glove, something?
It's a ticket stub. I don't think that counts, though.
Sure it counts.
Okay, well,
if something you want to count, absolutely it counts.
Who does Cedar Park beat at State in 12? Did it beat Lancaster?
Lancaster.
Oh, yeah. I have that. That was the first time I ever went to Cowboy Stadium, stepped on the field.
All right, guys, Coach Sark is ready. Didn't mean to cut you off, Snoop, but I'll be back in a few minutes.
Yeah, all right. Jeff will be with the Coach Sark media availability. And he'll consider that as well. I'll get him to separate himself from his marketing collectible mindset and then just into the fan mindset of what it means. So you're saying from 2012?
Yep. Mm-hmm. That's it. I don't really have a lot of sports collectibles because, you know, Craig, I'll never go to games, and I'm just a sports fan from afar. So I don't have a lot of
pro sports things.
Correct.
It doesn't have to be pro sports. It could be college sports. It could be high school, just like you're talking about. It doesn't have to be pro sports. I'm just saying an item, shirt, hat, card, you know, piece of paper, an 8x10 glossy, a shoe, a ball, it's something like that, an artifact, something that means a great deal to you that you do not wish to part with. And I'm not saying you wouldn't if you got offered, you know, a king's ransom, but I'm saying something that holds real emotional, meaningful value to you, the person. Not necessarily as a collector or a collectible, but just something that means something an awful lot to you. And for example, somebody said, you mean like a jersey you would not cut up into shorts? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You need that, Trey?
Yeah. Yeah, I traded in. And then somebody said, I have a football I had signed by Earl Campbell when I was 10 in 1984. Ricky Williams signed it prior to the 98 season. It's the one thing I would save in a house fire. Perfect example. And it might be worth some money. I don't know with those two Heisman winners. It might be worth something. But like he said, it's the one thing he would save in a house fire. You know, that kind of – my dad's letter jacket from high school. Remember what? Perfect. That's exactly what I'm talking about. That's a sports collectible. Two autographed cards, Barry Sanders, and it's a Barry Sanders, and I missed the other one there. Okay. All right. Well, I'll pull it back up in a minute. I have all my photo media credentials from the mid-'80s. I would not want to get rid of them. Yeah, who wants to do that, you know? My dad's Breckenridge Buckaroo State Championship letter jacket from 1959. Perfect. Coach Emery Ballard. They beat Kingsville 42-14 to win the 59 state title. Absolutely. Yeah, that's what you
He didn't look on the computer to pull that out either. He just...
I pulled it out. I have a winning OTB ticket for Secretariat winning the Triple Crown uncashed. Perfect. It's an OTB down there. Colt McCoy Fiesta Bowl jersey. Somebody else says it's a tie, a long-worn helmet signed by Earl Campbell, Roosevelt Leakes, Marty Akins, and Tommy Nobis. The other is my Roger Staubach jersey. Yeah. Those are the kinds of things I'm talking about. Robert and Gittings says, I may be the biggest sports fan in the world who owns zero sports memorabilia. Nothing at all. Now, Robert, you're not alone. I know a lot of people who don't do it. They're huge sports fans, but not into collecting things. It's perfectly understandable. I have a ticket stub to the game Emmitt Smith broke the rushing record. I did the math for his rushing yards per game and decided he would break it against the Lions. Bought the tickets beginning of the year, road tripped, and watched history. Now that is some smarts at work there. How about a pin from each major league ballpark? A 1955 Masters badge. Just awesome. My brother bought me an autographed picture of Ted Williams a couple of years before his death. I don't plan on selling it. Those kinds of things. My wife got me an autographed football for my 29th birthday, signed by Herschel Walker. My four-year players signed a framed jersey for me after the World Series in 2002. Concordia University, Craig remembers us. We played Texas the year they won it in 02. In fact, I do remember that because Texas, I think, was supposed to open with Georgia, and it couldn't happen. They couldn't get in. There was going to be rain, and Concordia came over. Those were my first games in the lead play-by-play chair for Longhorn Baseball, 02, the national championship season. So my first games would have been against Concordia, and I do remember that. I got them to come from right up the street and do that. That's really cool. All right, so those are some examples. Again, there's other ones as well. For example... a complete set of MLB plastic hats from Slush Puppies. I remember the cups from 7-Eleven. You could get those that had the Major League Baseball face on. Jim from Lago Vista has a Dusty Mangum autographed football. Probably wasn't the one he actually kicked through the uprights to beat Michigan in the January 2005 Rose Bowl. I love this. A New Orleans Jazz Pistol Pete Fancy Dribble Flip Book. The few years that the Jazz were in New Orleans before they moved to Utah. I keep a box of ticket stubs to games I watch with my wife, dad, kids, and big games. I have the game pin to the first UT game my wife and I attended, 2003, Oklahoma State at Texas. The Vince Young comeback game, absolutely, when they were down 35-7. First NCAA basketball game I remember watching, 79 finals between Bird and Magic. I remember Bird sitting on the bench with a towel on his head while he cried. I became a huge Bird fan due to his passion for winning. I was 7 years old. A few years later, I had a life-size poster of Bird as a Celtic. I'd love to have the poster on the wall of my man cave and
life-size.
Life-size, big one. Whoa. I had one. Sports Illustrated used to do those posters of NFL and Major League and NBA players. And I had one of Deacon Jones of the Rams, and he was and just you know going around the corner to make a tackle, and he was wearing and the all blues, wearing the blue jersey for that one. I had that, so you know those kinds of things. Our man CB says I had a Catholics versus convicts football that I won from ESPN 30 for 30 in 2016, but in October I gave it to Kevin Dunn before I left for Washington, the 31-30 game. Well, that was very nice of you to do that. A signed selfie with Pudge, a 2005 Astros ticket stuff from Game 5 of the NLCS on my mom's 80th birthday, framed with us, a picture of us at the game and Roger Clemens who pitched in that game. And and somebody says, being from Taylor, I have a baseball signed by Mickey Reichenbach and the rest of the Horns and Coach Gus, I think in 1975, but I don't see the Moreland signature. Verify that, because if you don't have it, you can get it to us. We can get Zonk to sign it. He would sign that ball. That's a ball he would definitely sign. All right, we need a break. So those are some of the things that we're taking as examples of what we're talking about. A sports collectible that you really would not part with. I mean, you never say never. I mean, if somebody wanted some of the items we talked about, somebody come in offering $1 million or whatever, nobody's going to blame you for that. But I'm just saying something that really holds true emotional fan value. Because after all, it's what we are. It's what draws us to the game, right? In large measure, fandom, if not of a team or of a player, certainly of the game itself. You know, you may not have a specific team that you want to win or whatever, or a specific player even that you're that excited about, but you love watching the game played. And then, of course, there are those who just absolutely, you know, love their team and pin their hopes on their teams and their dreams with that, and their dreams rise and fall with the feats and exploits of their heroes on the field. Perfectly understandable as well. So we're looking for that kind of thing, those kinds of deals. All right, we do have a Longhorn notebook coming up as well. We'll get to that. We do have Inconceivable. We have a sports Inconceivable moment as well that we'll get to, and a couple of other items. So all of that is still to come as we continue here with Light the Tower when Jeff is concluded with Coach Sark's media briefing. He will rejoin us, and that'll be part of our Longhorn Notebook as well as a recap of what the head football coach had to say as Texas continues to go through its spring practices, getting ready for the spring football game. The Orange-White game is 11 days away. So we'll hear the recap of what's happened with that. And we got Longhorn baseball to talk about as well. They are at the midway point of their 10-game homestand. 5 games down, 5 games to go, 5 games all in the win column. And overall, Texas has won 8 straight going back to the 3-game weekend series sweep of the Kansas Jayhawks in Lawrence. So it's tonight, the Nevada Wolfpack in town. We'll talk about that coming up and more as we continue here on the Horn, and for those of you watching on Twitch as well, where we're live, we're local, and digital on the Horn app and at Horn. The front door, oh boy, got to sit down, take a rest on the porch. Jeff will be rejoining us in a few minutes here, wrapping up the media briefing with Longhorns head football coach Steve Sarkisian following the morning practice. So we'll get a recap of that coming up just a few minutes when we have the Longhorn notebook. That'll be right around the corner. Also, a reminder, Longhorn baseball tonight, Texas takes on Nevada at UFCU Dish Falk Field. It is how they pronounce it, I'm told, you know, out there in Reno. They don't say Nevada, they say Nevada out there. I had a brother who lived out there for 25 years. He managed the shuttle drivers for the station casinos, the Palace Station, Boulder Station, Sunset Station, all that. And my sister-in-law dealt baccarat in the high limit room at the Venetian and the Monte Carlo for a long, long time. So she got to see Michael Jordan and Dennis Rodman and Tiger Woods and Mike Krzyzewski, and a lot of people come in back in the day through that.
Is Coach K a gambler?
A little bit. He could in the offseason. Say he was a nice tipper. He was a nice tipper. Michael Jordan was a nice tipper. Charles Barkley, an exquisite tipper. Really good. Tiger, not so much. Back in the day. And there's a reason why Scottie Pippen was known as No Tippin' Pippen. You know, there was that
an awful
as well.
Nickname.
Dennis Rodman, a good tipper.
I can see that.
Yeah. Yeah. Is what. So
I watched the HBO Tiger Woods documentary yesterday.
Yeah.
It was weird to watch.
Weird or difficult?
Well, because You know, I always heard about people joking about his personal life, but I'd never seen it laid out like that. And I was just kind of shocked.
The truth was a little bit jarring.
It was. Like, how his dad was and what he was doing.
You didn't draw any parallels with your dad and you.
No, because unfortunately, I don't know my real dad.
Right, right. No, I'm talking about the one that you basically refer to as your dad.
Yes. Oh, no.
The one who raised you.
Other than him being strict, no. No, nothing like that. My dad did never drank. Well, not while I was around.
Not while I was around.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
And he was not a womanizer. Okay. My dad, a very faithful man.
Very good. It's good to know. It's good to know. So anyway, Texas plays. That's how we got from Texas, Nevada to the fact that Snoop's father was not a womanizer and didn't drink at least when Snoop was around anyway. So that's good to know. But Texas plays Nevada this evening at UFC Udish Falk Field at 6:30. And it's a 6:15 airtime here on the Horn on 104.9. The Longhorns are going to go with Justin Eckhart. So he will start. Eckhart, no wins, no losses so far, and a 7.27 ER. It's limited duties there. They still have not announced. Nevada has not announced. Looking at their game notes and going to their website, they've not announced who their starting pitcher is going to be. So it'll be interesting to see how that works. They'll have midweek games tonight and tomorrow night. And then Abilene Christian comes to town for the weekend. Longhorns as high as number 3 in the national polls now. They were number 3 last week in collegiate baseball and also in the National Collegiate Baseball Writers Association, I believe. And they're now number 3 also in D1Baseball.com. They're still number 5 in the ESPN USA Coaches Poll. Lots of polls out there, as we know. So Texas has that game tonight. The Longhorns have won 8 in a row and are 25-8 going in. This is their open date week on the Big 12 conference schedule. They don't have a conference series this coming weekend. They have the non-conference series against Abilene Christian. Now, there are a couple of important conference series in the Big 12 this weekend. One of those this weekend will be Oklahoma State hosting or Oklahoma State playing at TCU, and they're the second and third place teams in the conference right now. Oklahoma State is at 6-3, TCU is at 7-2 in the league, and then of course Oklahoma State will be hosting Texas the following week. Texas Tech, I believe, is hosting Kansas this week. Kansas State is hosting Oklahoma. I believe I'll double check that, because in fact I've got it here right in front of me. I'm sitting there looking at it. I thought I had some outdated notes, but I don't. So this weekend, Oklahoma plays at Kansas State. TCU playing Oklahoma State at home. Kansas this weekend is playing Baylor at home. And West Virginia plays Texas Tech, and that series is in Morgantown. And Texas Tech coming off taking 2 out of 3 from TCU to get to 5-4 in Big 12 conference play. So those are the games in non-conference play that'll be going on as well. Also, before we get to the notebook here, the question we put on the Specs text line is a piece of sports memorabilia that you probably wouldn't part with, or it'd take an awful lot to make you part with it. Not as a something that is a collectible commodity, but something that means an awful lot to you. Somebody said, I got Al's autograph. Oh, no, sorry. Didn't have my glasses on. I got Muhammad Ali's. It's Ali's autograph on Galveston. Spring break, 1985. He and Sugar Ray Leonard were at the hotel where I was, at the right place at the right time. That is awesome. So that's kind of, somebody said Minnie Pearl started the trend with the price tag on the hat. Somebody said, I have a game used Nolan Ryan glove, one of only a handful of gloves he used throughout his career. It's awesome. Somebody said, the reason I'm a Dodger fan, a rookie Fernando Valenzuela card from 1981. Cooter has a Wrigley Field snow globe given to him by his wife's grandmother when he and his wife first began dating. To the date, the most thoughtful gift I've ever received. This meant that she accepted me into the family, and her acceptance carried more weight than my wife's father. So that was good. Oh, by the way, it was BK who cut up the jersey into shorts, by the way.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, it was Trey.
Somebody said it. Somebody on the text line said it was BK.
No, it was Trey.
It was Trey.
Okay.
Bucky had given him, it was a Ricky Williams Phillies minor league jersey, and Trey made boxers out of it.
Okay, Texter, you heard that? Stand corrected now. It was Trey. See, I thought I heard Trey talking about that one time.
Oh, yeah. I heard the confession Trey made to Bucky on the air when he had to admit what
happened. Wow, what he did with it. Somebody else says, I have a signed UT hat, signed by VY, members of the national championship team, and a Mono Ginobili jersey. So there you go. Mexican Elvis says, I moved a coach from the Toronto Argonauts, gave me a Doug Flutie Grey Cup game ball. See, that kind of stuff is really cool. My wife got me an autographed football for my 29th birthday, signed by Herschel Walker, a football that I got signed at St. Ed's by Troy Aikman, Russell Maryland, and Jay Novacek. Got it signed with my grandfather when I was six, an autographed picture of Doak Walker. To my dad,
went
on to name me after him. Yeah, nicely done, Doak. Very, very, very nicely done. And a near-complete 2011 Upper Deck University of Texas autograph set with all inserts. Those are some of the things that we're talking about. But right now, it's time for the notebook.
Jeff Howe's Longhorn Notebook, brought to you by Cedar Park Overhead Doors. Go to cpdoors.com.
We waited on the notebook because Jeff is fresh from the Steve Sarkisian media availability.
Yeah, so, and we'll get more into this in the second hour.
Yep.
One quick note, though. Yesterday when we had Mike Roach, our recruiting editor at Horns 24/7, on with us to talk recruiting, we talked to Mike about the dead period possibly being over at the end of May and June 1st, starting the contact period. I asked Sark about it, just preparations, and he said he's got no indication, has no clue when they might be able to go on the road, and that's kind of one of those things it sounds like everybody's just going to baby step their way back into this.
Right.
But I asked about preparations, and he said, if it's open June 1, he said, I'll be working every day in June. So, which is key, Craig, because coaches typically, they get that vacation time, late June, early July, when they'll take vacation.
Before you get to fall camp workouts and things like that. And,
doesn't sound like Sark's planning on taking a summer vacation. So, expect him to, and that staff over there, to be full bore at it with recruiting.
Maybe they could squeeze something in May after spring practice has ended.
Before the dead period starts.
Before the dead period starts, that would probably be
like a nice Memorial Day weekend getaway.
Something perhaps. Like that.
Here's the interesting thing, though, Craig. For recruits, this will be the first time they will have been able to visit a campus since, January of 2020?
Yeah.
Or maybe I think some guys got out and maybe some schools held a few junior days.
There were a few.
Last spring.
Yeah.
But overall,
there weren't many.
No, this will be the first time.
Just like there weren't many who actually were having spring practices that then got shut down or even got completed. Mac Brown was talking about they had a week of it at North Carolina before it got shut down, I think.
TCU, I think. Was TCU the only school in the Big 12? I think that they got
might have gotten all the way through it. Yeah.
Did they get all the way through it? Or
at least most of it anyway.
Yeah, but anyway, so this will be the first time in a year and a half that recruits have really been able to go make visits to other places. So that's something to be mindful of. So since this is an abbreviated edition of the notebook, I'll keep this simple. A lot of quarterback talk, and we'll get into that next hour.
Okay.
But everybody wants names, right? Who's standing out on the practice field? Sark was asked about that receiver position, and he said, early on it was kind of Jordan Whittington and everybody else, and we know Jake Smith's out with the foot.
Right.
Troy O'Meary hasn't been cleared yet with the knee. But he said there's three guys that are starting to show up more and more every day that are making strides. Joshua Moore, which we expected, Marcus Washington, and Kelvonte Dixon. So that's two of the guys in that group, Craig, that logjam of receivers that either guys that have been here a while or relatively new guys that haven't yet made their mark, kind of unproven commodities that you really need to figure out what you've got there. And I wrote this on the site about a week and a half ago, just kind of doing a position inventory overview of receivers. And one of the categories I break down is kind of what's the best case for spring, what's the worst case for spring. I think the worst case for spring is if this staff decides after spring ball they need to go into the portal and get a receiver, because there's so many other needs in this program, especially like inside linebacker. Offensive line is always a position where you can go get a guy in the portal. Defensive line, same thing. We know, and I asked Sark about kind of that hybrid edge position. We'll get into that next hour as well. That's another position. You know, you can never have too many quality guys in the secondary if something good pops up. So the fact that you've got, I don't really consider Joshua Moore in there, Craig, because he is a proven commodity. We know what he can do. He's more in the Jordan Whittington category for me. But the fact that you've at least got two with Marcus Washington and Kelvonte Dixon stepping up, that's good. He also got asked about the young linebackers. He flat out said David Bend has been terrific this spring.
Okay.
And that's a good thing. And he said Jalen Ford has flashed at times. So those two guys, again, Juwan Mitchell going into the portal, DeMarvian Overshown out recovering from the shoulder surgery, just don't have a lot of experience at that position like we talked about. You need guys to step up. And it sounds like those are the two guys that have answered the call so far. Sark had really, really positive things to say about David Benda.
Okay. Good stuff there. Like we said, more in-depth things from Jeff what came out of the media availability with Coach Sark coming up next hour in our next notebook. Up next, we bring you today's version of Inconceivable when we continue with Light the Tower here on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9 AM 1260. We are live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at Horn FM.
Those who were born to ride. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates.
Craig Way, Jeff Howe, and Snoop Daniel. Light the Tower.
Inconceivable. 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 Inconceivable!
You keep using the horn. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Inconceivable always means that it is brought to you by our good friend Dr. Matthew J. Crawford and his outstanding staff at Austin Orthopedics. If you have a sports-related injury, he's the guy to see. And not only that, they specialize in the prevention and treatment of sports-related injuries. Check him out on the web at austin-orthopedics.com. I start with food. I start with something that might seem inconceivable to both of you guys. Would you say that of things that food items that you like, at least they're in your top 20, would be bacon and hot dogs?
Yes.
Hot dog, it depends. gotta be from a ballpark.
Okay.
Probably won't eat a hot dog anywhere else other than, well, I don't know. Five Guys does make a pretty good hot dog.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, bacon's just, it's so versatile.
Yeah. So many things you could do with it. You got to have bacon, right?
I'm at the state fair, Craig. I'm a big fan of the deep fried bacon cinnamon roll.
Ooh.
On the way out.
Yeah. Well, some distressing news.
And one day I'm going to wonder why I have diabetes.
Yeah, well, there you go.
I digress.
More than a year, obviously, has passed since the onset of the pandemic, but grocery shoppers are continuing to be impacted by shortages of household staples, and the latest supply chain disruption really may throw a wrench in your plans for grilling and other outdoor gatherings this summer. That's because two seasonal staples, hot dogs and bacon, are going to be more expensive this year. Sales, as well as the price of meat, went up last year. But according to Bloomberg, they're saying farmers are now paying more than 30% to feed their herds. And so it's going to keep bacon and hot dog prices high through the summer. It says the whole supply chain has really been squeezed. And unfortunately, it does not look like this is going to be something that improves between here and early summer. Just saying. Bacon and hot dogs.
Look, as long as you're telling me if I get to a baseball game this summer, as long as you're telling me it's not going to jeopardize dollar hot dog night, then we can make it through this.
It might.
Okay.
Might not be a dollar hot dog night. That's my point.
Then we're going to have problems. I'm just saying, we're going to have problems.
I'm just saying.
I'm assuming, like, that's one reason why I like going to Rangers games whenever I'm in the Metroplex or can find my way up there. I know at the old place they did dollar hot dog night. I don't know if at the Guelph they're going to do.
No, they're doing it.
Are they?
Yeah, it was. Okay. They've already done one. It was the day game against the Blue Jays.
Awesome. Just got to get rid of that like four dog minimum or maximum when you get up there.
So in other words, how many hot dogs would you buy? How much wood could a woodchuck chuck? How many hot dogs would you buy on a dollar hot dog? It one trip to the concession stand, if allowed, unlimited dog purchasing.
I'd probably go to five.
You'd buy five at a time.
No.
Devour all five.
Mm-hmm.
Would you return?
At that point, probably not.
Your personal record was what at Del Diamond? Would you do eight?
I did eight one time and like just was disgusted with myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you got eight now.
Got eight, yeah.
Okay. Okay. Did you feel like the guy in, did you ever see Meatballs? The one with the summer camp movie with Bill Murray in it? look at all those weenies. They're all in the thing. It was a hot dog eating contest.
No, but that's something we need to power rank, though. We need to power rank summer camp movies.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good
that's
ones
good
out there.
One. That's a good
oh,
one.
Oh, like Heavyweights. Heavyweights is awesome.
Yeah.
You remember that, Snoop? You remember Heavyweights back in the day?
Ew.
As a fat kid, you made a movie glorifying fat camp. I'm all about it.
All right. This was something, if you were listening to Bucky and Aaron this morning, you heard them play right by the end of the show, but I thought it really belonged because among the items in Inconceivable, first of all, are you a bowler? You bowl much?
I bowl. I wouldn't call myself a bowler.
Okay.
I'm not like the dude or anything or Walter.
Okay. Not like that.
No.
Okay. All right. Ever pull off a 7-10 split?
I've never seen one in person.
Never seen
off,
one in person? No. You know how rare it is, the 7-10, for those who don't know, the pins on the farthest ends on the back row when you're left with only those two.
I once saw Woody
trying to pick up the
spare. I once saw Woody Harrelson do it with one hand.
Yeah. A kingpin?
Yep.
Yeah. So
you ever seen that? You ever seen kingpins?
No. No.
It's worth seeing.
Oh, man. It's awesome.
Yeah. So 7-10 split is rare enough to pick up. But then to try to pick it up on national television, well, they just had a call this. Aaron played this morning, so this is it now of the nationally televised 7-10 split.
7-10, come on, man.
The 7-10 only been made on television three times in the history of professional bowling on TV.
Come on, kid, do it. Goodness, the ginger assassin just dropped the 7-10. You bet, kid. You bet. Oh, man.
He said the ginger assassin just dropped the 7-10.
I don't remember that being the reaction, Craig, when Roy Munson stepped up with the rubber hand and nailed one to keep his Reno open going with Big Earn McCracken.
Yeah. Okay, so if there's one other thing that can top it, I don't know that this actually even tops it, but it's a story. I had to leave myself enough time to tell this story. And did you ever hear the story about the guy who mailed himself home in a box?
I think we covered this, yeah. I think
the 55th anniversary is coming up on this.
Yeah.
And about the guy who mailed himself home from Australia. He was trying to get all the way to Wales, and he only made it as far as L.A.
I think we covered something on this a while back. There was something. This was several weeks ago, maybe.
Well,
I'm thinking about another story.
Well, this is the 55th anniversary coming up on this dude. And Brian Robeson, who was a teenager, he was 19 years old, didn't have enough money. He went from Wales down Australia to work there, and then he didn't have enough money to get back home. And he said there were two Irishmen, as he says, who nailed down a crate and did it. He said their names were John and Paul. He did not have friends named George and Ringo that I know of. But anyway, he'd gone down to work on a job on the Victorian Railways, and shortly after his 19th birthday, took a long plane ride across the world to start his new life in Melbourne. He passed through Tehran, New Delhi, Singapore, Jakarta, and Sydney. He said it was one hell of a journey, but it was better than coming back. When he arrived there, the hostel that he'd been allocated was a rat-infested hole. He said at that point he decided, I've got to go back. He did work for about 6 or 7 months. He quit his job, and he just didn't know I was going to get home because it cost what back then he said £700 to £800, which is around $960 to $1,100, but it's only learning about 30 pounds, $41 a week, so it was impossible. And he started talking about it, and he saw this at Pickford's, the UK-based moving company. The sign said we can move anything anywhere, and so they got to thinking about it, and sure enough, he gets this crate and he gets these two guys to help him. They spent 3 days talking about it. Wooden box measuring 30 by 26 by 38. It put him in there along with a pillow, a flashlight, a water bottle, a bottle for urine, and a tiny hammer to force open the crate once he'd reached London, the intended destination. He said the first 10 minutes were fine, but your knees started to cramp up when they stuck up to your chest. You didn't think about that in advance?
Man, that's awful.
Then he was in the plane. There was very little oxygen involved. Then when they landed in Sydney, the box was turned upside down on the tarmac. He said, so I'm sitting on my neck and head for 22 hours upside down.
That's
started blacking out, this and that. Finally gets to L.A., and when he gets there, he pries open the box, finds out he's in L.A. They discover him, and although he was technically in the United States illegally, no charges were filed. The authorities simply passed him back to Pan American Airways, and they arranged for him to fly back to London in a first-class seat. So the 55th anniversary is just coming. He's trying to find the guys who helped him.
Gotcha.
John and Paul.
Just, you know, kind of
in a box.
You know, one of my irrational fears in life, I've told you, like, snake coming out of the toilet.
Right,
is one.
Right. Yeah, that's one.
It's somehow being in a scenario where I get stuck in, like, one of those big shipping crates.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you see on the ships, the big metal ones.
Sure.
And, like, I'm
down in the hold.
Yeah, and I'm, like stacked, like, so I'm on the in the crate, but I'm on the inside. I'm stacked around all these crates, and it's impossible to get to me. Like, that's one of my, just like I said, it's an irrational fear, because there's what scenario like that would happen, but just being stuck in there, and in theory there's no way out, I think you'd just go insane.
Yeah
It's terrible.
This guy says today that he was never able to completely escape things because, you know, all of the attention and everything.
Yeah.
So he's just trying to find those other two guys. He doesn't know if he'll ever find them.
Well,
even though he wrote them right afterwards and say, hey, I made it back.
Got a hell of a story.
Yes, he does have that. All right, we've got hour number two coming up of Light the Tower here on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. We are live. We're local and digital and on Twitch as well on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
Bucky and Aaron.
Have you seen the picture of the guy who saved the little puppy in Florida?
Oh, yeah, from the alligator?
Oh, that alligator was only like a 3-foot alligator. He was mighty hungry. He didn't want to try to eat that whole puppy, wasn't he? And that was...
That old man. That's old man strength right there. What's stronger, the jaws of an alligator or the old man?
That old man jumped right in there and grabbed those jaws and fried that little puppy open.
What would you do in that moment?
What would I do?
Yes.
I need another 2 feet and I'd be saying, bye, puppy.
Bucky and Aaron. Weekdays from 6 till 10 on the Horn.
Experience a better way to buy at Henna Chevrolet.
I tend to be a bit grouchy when it comes to car dealers, but Henna's level of service quickly had me at ease, and I actually enjoyed the experience.
I don't know if I just bought a car or made a bunch of friends, but I'm more than okay with that.
For a lower price made easy, find new roads at Henna Chevrolet or HennaChevyAustin.com.